There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, we are into the second hour of the show. We'll continue our chat on all things Super Bowl in just a few moments' time. Let's get to the Premier League first, though. Mark Archer's watching Spurs against Newcastle.
38 minutes gone at Wembley. It's Tottenham Hotspur 0, Newcastle United 0. Spurs are dominating possession. They have 72% of the possession so far in the first half after almost 40 minutes, but yet to force too many opportunities at goal. But the great chance there just coming from a corner, and Newcastle have cleared again. So, again, towards the end of the first half here, Spurs 0, Newcastle 0. Keep your bang up to date if any action comes from Wembley.
KFC T20 Big Bash League underway. Sixers taking on the Thunder. It's a Sydney derby down in the Big Bash. A little later on, we'll have more details and updates on West Indies against England. That one starts about 7 o'clock, isn't it, Arch?
It's about correct over in the Caribbean there, isn't it?
And, of course, we'll have details on Australia against Sri Lanka. Two test matches ongoing at the moment. No games in the Levante Getafe game. No goals, I should say, in that game at the moment. 49 minutes run on that one. As and when those goals go in, we will let you know. Back to Ross Chris for all the latest from the world of Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm still here with Andy. Andy's a super fan from the New England Patriots. He's been on the show the last four years, you say? The last four out of five years?
Four out of five, yeah.
And like I said, I couldn't find it. I dug deep in the Rolodex, and I just could not find myself an LA Rams fan. But before we get you off here, I got to get your prediction for the game, and I'm going to come back to you after the game's over. Where are we going? What are we saying here?
I'm going 34-31 Patriots. I think it will be a close game, but I think Brady and everyone will just have just enough.
34-31 New England Patriots. There you heard it first. Andy Turner, friend of Dubai Eye. You can follow Andy on Twitter. What's your Twitter there, Andy?
No, I'm not there anymore.
He's removed himself from the realm of social media. Andy, thanks for joining us on the show today. So we're going to keep our focus on football. We're going to look at some local football right now because some local scores coming out of the EAFL. The Abu Dhabi Wildcats defeated the Dubai Barracudas 16-12 in a nail-biter. And the Dubai Stallions, coached by Patrick Campos, defeated the Alain Desert Foxes, coached by Johnny Sharp, 20-2. Those are the weekend scores. And yes, you heard that right, coming out of your speakers. There is American football here in the UAE, and it's played at a high level of high quality and a lot of talent. They have cheerleaders, they have coaches, they have a whole nine yards, and occasionally they even have an announcer. So we have the EAFL joining us now on the show up here at Barasti, and I'm going to jump into the league here with a close friend of mine, Patrick Campos, who's been on the show before. Patrick, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ross. Good to be here.
Now, Patrick, what's your title right now at the EAFL besides Jack of All Trades?
Yeah, that's pretty much the main title. So I'm the Director of Youth Football. So I oversee the Youth Football League. And I'm also the head coach of the men's Dubai Stallions.
Yeah, and you switched over from the Dubai Barracudas, but I'm not going to mention that anymore today because I want you to leave the stage in one piece here because it seems like you brought out the whole entire squad up here to Barasti tonight. But football in the UAE, how many years has the league been running now?
We're now in our seventh year, actually, and so since 2012, and it's been up and down. We got off to a big start and then sort of plateaued out, but it's on the upswing again, and I think this year's men's division in particular is extremely exciting.
Yeah, you mentioned that men's division. You're a head coach in the men's division, but it's not just the men. We have divisions for all age groups if you're interested in coming to American football, from peewees all the way to guys in their 40s still holding on, still playing football at a high caliber.
In their 40s, even into their 50s.
Oh,
we say 8 to 80.
8 to 80.
We take them all. So it's a lot of fun. And 50-plus nationalities represented, and you see a bunch of faces from different countries here who all play on the Stallions.
Why American football? Maybe you're a parent at home and you're thinking, you know, I'm going to sign my son up for soccer, I'm going to sign my daughter up for rugby, but basketball, cricket, why choose the sport of American football?
So, look, first of all, I firmly believe that no sport has the combination of discipline, of structure, teamwork and camaraderie that American football has. I really do believe that. I know that there's been a lot of sort of negative publicity. The sport is different than it was in the 70s. It is very different. It's actually quite safe. The kids who play in the league come out of it really transformed with a very positive experience and very positive development for them as kids. And for the men, well, you can see the guys around here. They love it. They love it. It's a good, tough, physical activity, and the camaraderie is just unmatched.
Now, I'm joined now with Alex, Joaquin, and Ed, who are all up here on the stage. They're all involved with the AFL in some type of capacity. But they're also, I'm going to imagine, you three gentlemen are also sports fans. You're going to be watching the big game come Monday morning?
That's a fair assessment of the situation.
That's a fair assessment of the situation. That sounds like an army man talking to you right now. To my right now, I'm joined by Alex. Alex, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
So, Alex, you're looking at this game right now, the New England Patriots going against the Los Angeles Rams. What in this game, I guess, who in this game sticks out to you as a player to watch?
So I think a lot of what this game's going to turn on is whether the Rams can get Gurley going. He looked great against Dallas. Obviously, he had some knee issues later in the season, but looked good in the divisional game. Then, we're not really sure if he took a step back in the AFC or the NFC Championship game against the Saints, or if he was just stymied, but didn't get a lot of yards. I think he got like 13, 14 yards. So if they can get that ground game going and hold the ball and keep it out of Brady's hands, then I think they could be the team to beat. But it's going to turn on that for me.
Joaquin Femus joins us. Joaquin, thanks for coming back on the show. You've been on here before. One man, Alex, just mentioned Tom Brady. In your mind, is he the best quarterback to play the game?
I think undoubtedly he's the greatest. My bad, sorry. Tom Brady by far is the greatest player to ever play the game, not just quarterback. I mean, rings are one thing, but the way he plays all up here, he's 42, he's still killing it. I think that if Tom Brady plays lights out, then the Rams don't have a chance this game.
You really think it could be a lopsided game?
I do think that if the Rams can't stop the run and if Tom Brady gets it going, then there's nothing the Rams can do here.
Yeah, it would be hard. It is hard to stop one of the greatest players of football of all time. Also on the show, we have Ed. He's sporting his Boston Red Sox shirt, his New England Patriots hat. However, I don't think that's the one they wear on the sidelines there, but it looks quite unique. Ed, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me.
All right, Ed. So I'm going to play devil's advocate. You know, they're going against the best defense in the league. That Los Angeles Rams defense, coached by 71-year-old young Wade Phillips. I think they can just stop Tom Brady. They're going to swallow him up the middle. How does he get around this defense?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, the likes of Sue and you got Donald there, and they make a lot of penetration up on the line. And, I mean, if you look a little bit at the Patriots and what they've been doing, I mean, they've tied down that offensive line, and they've been working hard. And, I mean, they kind of give Brady a bit of protection. And, I mean, that's what they've got to fight. I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. And if, for instance, the Rams can get some penetration and Brady has to get it out quick, I mean, the likes of Talibu's in the cornerback, everything, they're going to be in the game. But if the offensive line for the Patriots can hold them, I mean, as Joaquin said, yeah, Brady will just dictate the whole game.
Alex, I want to come back to you because you actually served in the American military.
That's
you,
right.
You played with Alexander Villanueva, who's played as an Army Ranger on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Before this season started, I would say the NFL ended last season with kind of a black eye. There was some issues with concussions. There was issues with player safety. There was issues with domestic abuse. Then we had the issue with the national anthem. Do you think, in your eyes, that the NFL has recovered, has bounced back this season?
Yeah, in terms of the concussion debate, I think that's something that's going to just continue to go on, and hopefully, you know, medicine will continue to find answers and figure out ways to enhance player safety. On the anthem front, yeah, you know, I was actually surprised, a positive surprise, that there was a lot less talk and chatter about that moving into the season. Obviously, you have, you know, Colin Kaepernick's situation and folks complaining that he's not on a roster yet. But, no, I think there's been a good step forward, and I think a lot of those fans, that fan base that had an issues with kneeling, not necessarily with the message, but with the manner in which it was done, which is kneeling before the national anthem. I mean, that's something I took issue with as well, and I think Mr. Villanueva did too, but judging by his actions before the game. But, you know, I think the league has done a good job of sort of quieting that down and allowing us to come back together as a country and just put all that behind us.
Yeah, and I want to come back to you, Patrick, because you oversee the youth football out here. We mentioned concussions now. It's my third time bringing it up. But what do you do as a youth football coordinator for the AFL to try to minimize parents' worries for signing their kids up so they don't get a brain injury?
It's all about technique. It's all about teaching players the correct technique, primarily tackling technique, where, you know, a lot has been pulled over from the world of rugby. It's a much, much safer sport than, you know, than it was before, just in terms of that technique. But the other thing is really, you know, it's teaching sort of even running the ball, even the way you carry the ball. And you actually have to play at, you know, at a certain speed. Believe it or not, it's counterintuitive, but you don't want to play football slow. If you play it slowly, that's when you're standing around and that's when injuries happen. So we teach the kids to play at football speed, to play an aggressive but very safe in terms of technique sport.
Yeah. Joaquin, Ed, I want to come back to you guys because we've mentioned a lot about Tom Brady in this show, and he'll get a lot more mentions probably by the end of the show, as he should. He has 5 Super Bowls. He's been there. He's done that. And Todd Gurley, also a phenomenal running back. Give me a guy not named Gurley, not named Brady, that you think will stand out in the Super Bowl.
I think James White, running back for the Patriots. 2 years ago against the Falcons, he set the Super Bowl record for catches for any player as a running back. I think the Rams, they don't have the linebackers to cover James, and I think James is going to have a big day. 15 catches will break his own record.
There you go. And Ed?
Yeah, I'd like to, if I could, put 2 names out. I think Edelman on the Patriots side, I mean, he's the clutch man when it comes to the playoffs. So I think, I mean, he'll open up for the other receivers like Hogan. And then, I mean, on the LA Rams side, I think Cooks, he's playing against his former team that he lost the Super Bowl with last year. So, I mean, he'll be right up for it.
Really quick, because we have to go to a break after this, guys. I'm going to go around the table really quick. Derek Patrick, score prediction?
I'm looking at the Patriots, unfortunately, 30-24.
Yeah, and you don't want to get kicked out of the house.
I don't want to get
your wife is a diehard Patriots
out of the house.
Fan. Julie, she's done a lot for the league. Ed?
Yeah, I go with the Patrick, and I go a similar score line to Patrick for sure.
Okay. Joaquin? 31. Remember, your mom's behind you.
31-28, Patriots win.
Mr. Army?
You know, as a lifelong Steelers fan and having played Army football at Villanueva, I have to go against the Patriots. I don't know if it's the right pick, but I'll say 27-24 Rams.
There you have it. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedules to come up here at Barasti. They are the EAFL. If you're interested in getting involved with the EAFL, you can check out www.eafl.ae. Tell them Patrick sent you. If you want to get involved with the league is going on. They play every Friday. It's very, very fun and exciting. If you want to see what American football is like out here in the desert, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back with all the sport after this.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
Are you listening to The Grill? We're live from Barasti, up here on the rooftop garden at Barasti. Six Nations weekend. Massive crowd in here for Barasti. So it's great to see so many people turning out to watch their live sport. Early game in the Premier League. Spurs entertaining Newcastle. Mark Archer.
Half-time at Wembley in the early kickoff of today's Premier League. And I can tell you that it's 0-0 deadlock at Wembley Stadium between Spurs and Newcastle United. Spurs have dominated possession in the first half, but they haven't been able to turn that into clear-cut chances on goal. So it's all locked up at half-time. Spurs 0, Newcastle 0. Till Tom, and I can tell you, we talked about the weather earlier and how it's a bit snowy and a bit drizzly and a bit cold, a bit grey in the UK today. If you were hoping to watch League One action, Accrington Stanley versus Blackpool, well, you're going to be bang out of luck because it's been called off.
Too much rain, too much snow. Listen, I don't think there's much chance of an event that's going on here in the UAE being called off because of bad weather. A 3-day international multi-sport event that showcases the talent, the diversity and the sportsmanship of school students worldwide is taking place here. In Dubai at the moment. The 3-day event across Dubai's Sports City in the Hamdan Swimming Complex has featured close to 600 children from 20 schools, 9 different countries, all recognised. And as I said, it's happening right here in the UAE. To tell us a little bit more about it, the director of the World School Games, Mr. Andrew Cook, joins us now live on the line. Andrew, appreciate your time this afternoon. I understand that the under-11s competition or the under-11s games are coming to a conclusion this afternoon.
They are. We've just finished the swimming in Hamdan Sports Complex and we're currently hot-footing it over to Dubai Sports City for the closing ceremony.
In terms of how the action has been over the last week and in terms of the competition that you've seen, has this been one of the best yet?
It's been unbelievable. I mean, last year was the inaugural year for the event. We had 12 schools. This year we had 20 schools, like you say, from 9 countries. The standard of competition's been incredible, and it's been great to see the kids giving it their all and producing some unbelievable performances.
In terms of, obviously, competition, sports competition is rife all around the world. What was the brains behind the World School Games? How did it come about?
I mean, there are similar events in nature in the region already. There's the likes of the BSME Games, which take place, but that's only for British schools in the Middle East. We recognised that there were more schools who would love to showcase their students' talents. So we came up with the concept to give them the platform to bring these kids together from all over the world and pit them against each other and see what they've got.
In terms of the disciplines or the sports, what sort of sports are competed during the games?
Yes, so on Thursday we had athletics, track and field. Friday was football for both boys and girls, and today at Hamdan it was swimming.
So three disciplines, and as I mentioned, upwards of 600 children from over 20 schools, 9 different countries as well. I mean, these things must also come with something of a logistical headache for you, and there are others of the organisers. Do you get good support here in Dubai, here in the UAE?
Yeah, we have some great partners, especially with the sports. On Thursday, we were supported by Ultimate Athletics. Yesterday was ESM for the football. Today was Hamilton Aquatics for the swimming, and without these guys we really couldn't put the event on. Like you say, there's loads of logistics. We've got buses to take care of, lunches, hotel bookings, all this kind of stuff. But to have the experts there in their respective field for the sports is invaluable, and it keeps the whole event running smoothly. If there are any, you know, tricky decisions or arguments, it takes that away from us and we put it onto the experts, and you know, keeps the grumbles away from our door.
Primary under-11s, as you mentioned, have literally just come to a conclusion. You're hot-footing it over to the presentation ceremony down in Dubai Sport City. Dubai Sport City, the facilities there are well-known and well-regarded. Has that been a good base for you as well?
I mean, it's incredible. Not just the sports facilities, but the infrastructure around it. You've got the cafes for the parents to get themselves a coffee whenever we're starting early in the morning. At the end of the day, there's a few bars for the teachers if they've had a long session. So, yes, Sports City, they're great to work with. We've been there last year. We host a lot of events down at Sports City, and yeah, it's a great place to take the kids and to take the schools.
Primary under-11s has come to a conclusion, but I understand that you've also got another week of competition coming up at the end of February for the secondary element. What sort of age group does that take into account?
Yeah, we've got a couple of weeks off, and then at the end of February it's the under-13 event. So similar again, same sports, just older kids. We have 16 schools, again from a host of different countries, flying in for that one. So yeah, we're already excited to see what they've got.
Talking of flying in, I also understand that you've had some rather special guests down for the World School Games this year. I understand that World European and Commonwealth champion swimmer Robbie Renwick has been part of proceedings.
He was. I thought you were actually going to be talking about Chris McCarty there, but yes, Robbie Renwick was there too. he was great. He was our VIP guest, and he opened the games on Thursday morning. Not only did he do that, but he also hung about for the rest of the event. He was taking time to take selfies with the kids, show them his very big and impressive Olympic silver medal, and he also took part in an exhibition race today against 8 of the athletes.
Yeah, heaven forbid, the very thought of Chris McCarty in a swimming pool is enough to put most of our listeners off anyway. But good to hear that Chris was also part of proceedings, Robbie was part of proceedings. For those that want to find out more about the World School Games, you mentioned that you've got the secondary, the under-13 division from Thursday the 28th of February through to Saturday the 2nd of March. Maybe for this, maybe for future events, what's the best way to find out more information, Andrew?
Yeah, the website has all the information, so if they go on to wsgevents.com, they'll be able to see all of the event dates, the ages, and locations for all the events coming up.
And is this a sort of an event that obviously is international by name? Is this something that will go on the road to other destinations, or have you found something of a home here in the UAE?
I mean, for the multi-sports events that we had this weekend, Dubai is a great place. People love coming here at this time of year. It gives them a chance to get away from the cold. We had the Russians here, the Kazakhs. They said they're knee-deep in snow when they go home. So for them to get some sunshine in January is perfect for them. We also have other World School Game events. We have a World Schools Netball Cup coming up in Loughborough in June. We have a World Schools Football Cup coming up in Barcelona in October. And there's a couple other in the pipeline as well.
Well, Andrew, it sounds like a roaring success. I know Chris McCarty's been very, very impressed by proceedings. I'm sure more information will be put forward by all the team here at Dubai Eye. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I'm going to let you get back to Sports City to get through that prize-giving ceremony, because I'm thinking that you probably want to be in front of a TV screen, either down there at Sports City or somewhere else around town, for around about 6:15 to watch Scotland give Italy an absolute hiding in the Six Nations.
We'll maybe catch the second half.
Enjoy that one. Andrew, thank you very much indeed for joining us live here on the show. That's Andrew Cook, director of the World School Games. Find out more on their dedicated webpage and, of course, across all of their social media.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You listen to Dubai on the 3.8. What's happening in the football, Mark Archer?
Yeah, we just got action underway in the second half of the early Premier League kickoff today at Wembley. It's still 0-0 between Spurs and Newcastle. 2.5 minutes gone in the second half. Who will score the first goal? Tom, I'll bring you bang up to date if any action comes in from North London.
6:15 is the kickoff in the Six Nations. Today's action in the Six Nations after Wales' impressive victory last night over in Paris. Italy taking on Scotland in the opener. We'll bring you all the details on that one. Let's go to a bit of golf, shall we? Because obviously we've got golf here in the region and stateside.
Yeah, let's head to the Waste Management Phoenix Open. This is at TPC in Scottsdale, Arizona. Ricky Fowler all alone at 13 under after two rounds of golf. He's followed by Justin Thomas at 12 under. South African Brandon Grace at 11 under. He's tied with Trey Molyneux. Cooch is at 10 under. Cameron Smith at 10 under. Bubba Watson, he's not been on form as of late, but he's in the mix here. He's at 9 under. Martin Laird at 9 under. Harold Varner III at 7 under. So some big names out there. Webb Simpson as well. He's at 6 under. Hideki Matsuyama, 5 under. Kieran Bradley at 5 under. Russell Knox, Beef, doing well down there. He's at 5 under. All the big names heading. If you're not in Saudi, you're out in Phoenix at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, Tom.
Who is in Saudi at the Saudi International? Who's in contention?
I can tell you that a couple of really low scores have been posted today in Saudi Arabia. Rounds of 62 by Tom Lewis, the Englishman. That's good enough to move him up to be alone in third position. But Heltong Lee, the Chinese man, has shot 8 under par. He's finished his round of 62 today, and he's finished at 16 under par. He's tied for the lead with Dustin Johnson, the world number 3, who has one hole to play. So the two leaders at 16 under par, Dustin Johnson, one hole to play, and Heltong Lee. That's a one-shot lead, actually a big gap, five-shot lead back to Tom Lewis, who shot that round of 62. So it's the English, it's the American taking on the Chineseman at the top of the leaderboard in Saudi.
One of the big talkers of the day is, of course, all things Six Nations. Ireland against England is a tantalising prospect. 8:45 kickoff. You can bet your bottom dollar that Barastia is going to be absolutely heaving by then. It's already busy down here. Let's just have a little look at some of the team news that has come through that we know about at the moment. Robbie Henshaw will switch from his usual midfield role to play at fullback for the first time since his Ireland debut back in 2013. He returns after missing the autumn internationals, as does scrum half Conor Murray. How much is he worth to the Ireland team at the moment? As to the England team, it's going to be fascinating to see Manu Tuilagi back in an England jersey. It's been about five, six years, isn't it?
Manu Tuilagi returns after numerous injury problems. It's his first Six Nations start, Tom, for 6 years. Which sounds amazing, and let's hope he can maintain some form and some fitness, because he makes a big difference, the blockbusting man from Leicester in the midfield for England. Some other news from the English team. Eddie Jones has elected to put Elliot Daly at fullback ahead of Mike Brown. Interesting to see that he's stuck with Daly at fullback. And again, the fit again brothers, Maku and Vinny Bilopol, are two big powerhouses in the forward pack in the front eight for England, will both play as well. Tom Curry and Mark Wilson will probably be poised to make Six Nations debuts. So that's the team. That's the team who's coming out of Eddie Jones' England.
Good to see the Vinny Bilopol brothers back in England colours as well together. It's been a while since they've both started.
Yeah, both injuries, the prop of Marco and Billy Vunipola provide so much ball-carrying impact at number eight. You get the blockbuster of Manu Tuilagi in the centres, and then you've got some real powerful ball carriers that Eddie Jones seems to like to base his team around. It's getting over the gain line, getting go-forward ball. So interesting to see how those all those three players go today. They've all struggled for form, well, fitness in particular, but they will play a big part in England's World Cup campaign in Japan later in the year.
Ben Youngs starts at 9 for England. He's got his work cut out. He's probably against the best scrum half in the world at the moment in Conor Murray. Is that fair assessment?
Yeah, Conor Murray's missed the autumn internationals of injury, so he's a massive asset to come back. His pivotal access and combination with Johnny Sexton is key for Ireland at 9 and 10. And Conor Murray's box kicking game, he's strong player, he's a good defender. He's an integral part of the success of Ireland.
One man who is not on the subs bench for England is Danny Kerr. So it is Ben Youngs who starts. Which makes for interesting listening, because Danny Kerr is in fact here in Dubai. He's here in the UAE. Our roving reporter Chris McCarty, one half of Dubai's answer to Ant and Dec, has been out and about and got hold of Mr. Danny Kerr. Sat down for a nice coffee. I'm not sure who bought them. Probably Danny, knowing Chris McCarty. Chris asked Danny to explain why he's sunning himself in Dubai and not with his England teammates preparing for this mouth-watering clash with Ireland.
Yeah, I'm not in the squad at the moment. Eddie went with Ben Youngs and Dan Robson, so yeah, we had a fairly open and honest conversation. He wants to give those two a go and see how they go, and I've just got to wait and hope that I get a chance and see what happens, really.
Door very much still open. Obviously, it's a World Cup year for you personally. There is one goal and one goal only. As Eddie said to you, Danny, listen, go away, work on a few things, come back. The door's always open.
Yeah, he said the door's open. So, look, I'd love to play a part in this Six Nations. For me, it's the best tournament out there. It's brilliant to be a part of. Gutted to not be in that opener in Dublin on Saturday, but you never know what happens in sport. It can all change so quickly. So all I can do is be ready if the chance comes available, and hopefully take my opportunity if it does.
You've said there it's the best tournament out there, the Six Nations. I grew up in it. I grew up when Gavin Hastings was knocking the ball through the post. That was me, Gregor Townsend. The list goes on. What is it about the Six Nations and that you as a fan and as a player that you love so much?
I think just everyone loves it. You never know what's going to happen. Anyone could beat anyone. There's always an upset. I think this year, I think one of five could win it this year. And I think Italy will cause some serious problems. My good mate Conor O'Shea is doing some brilliant things over there, and see how well their provincial sides are going. Yeah. At the moment, Treviso beat Harlequins this year. So the Italian rugby's growing really strong as well. But anyone could beat anyone, and I can't wait to actually watch it as a fan for once.
Now, he will be watching it as a fan. He'll be watching it from here in the UAE. Danny, in fact, took time to preview tonight's clash with Ireland, gives his appraisal of Joe Schmidt's men.
I'll be nervous for the boys. Obviously, some really good mates who'll be going out there and trying to win in Dublin, which is a very hard thing to do, but I've just got a sneaky feeling that we might nick a win over there.
Yeah, weirdly, an awful lot of my rugby mates are saying the same. What are you basing that on? Is that...
I don't know. I just think everyone's kind of maybe writing us off a little bit, so we're kind of going over there underdogs, which is something that doesn't normally happen. I mean, Ireland are brilliant at the moment. Let's face it, they are probably the best team in the world at the moment, the most informed team. But you never know, first game of the series, anything can happen. You can spring a slight upset, and you know, we got Billy back, we got Mako flying, Owen's fit. You know, hopefully the stars are aligning and hopefully we can have a big performance.
Ireland are the best team probably in the world right now. With that in mind, what are they doing that England are not, that Scotland are not, that even the All Blacks, the great All Blacks, that they're not doing either?
I think what they are doing is their basics are spot on. You know, 9 to 10 out of 10 every game. Their defence, Andy Farrell's got them working incredibly hard in the defence. They're so hard to break down. They put their bodies on the line every tackle of the game. Their kicking game, I think a lot's been talk about that. Conor Murray puts the ball on a sixpence for the chases, and one thing as a scrum half, you need your chasers to chase properly every single time. And you look at their wingers, you know, Conway, Stockdale, whoever it is, they chase like mad things every single time, and they make a slightly bad kick a good kick by how good they chase, and on the floor they're brilliant, great turning over the ball, incredibly tough at the breakdown. So they don't do anything ridiculously flashy, although Tadhg Furlong, every now and then will pull something out of the bag like he did last year at Twickenham. So they've got the ability for trick plays, but what they do do is they do the basics incredibly well, and they make it very hard to score against.
How much does winning this Six Nations matter in relation to the World Cup? I mean, are you privy to conversations, you and the boys, whereby you're saying, listen, this Six Nations takes on even greater importance because it gives us that momentum?
Look, I don't think it's paramount. If you don't win the Six Nations, it doesn't mean you're not going to do well in the World Cup. Obviously, every team will be going into this Six Nations thinking, we can win this. What a momentum giver, and sort of self-belief will go even higher if you can do it. But look, it'd be amazing if England won it, but if we didn't, you know, I'd still think we got a great chance in the World Cup. And like I say, six or seven teams come that World Cup that are going to think they've got a chance of winning it. And a lot can change in 5-6 months, however long it is in between.
You listen to Chris McCarty in conversation with Danny Kerr, who's here in the UAE, not part of Eddie Jones and England's plans at the moment. So, what has that man done, Eddie Jones, to resurrect England after their disastrous 2015 World Cup campaign? And what are the decision to have two co-captains out there on the field? Danny gives his views here on all of that, starting with the galvanising influence Jones has had.
I think obviously we had a brilliant start. I think Stuart had done some brilliant stuff with the team. Obviously the World Cup didn't go to plan. Eddie came in, fresh voice, fresh ideas, really got the best out of the boys. And I think people forget that, you know, in that 19 game, we had a fair bit of luck as well along the way, bounces of the ball, decisions. And it's brilliant to go on that run. And you know what it's like in sport, momentum. It's very hard to stop when you start winning, getting that winning formula. It's very hard to break it sometimes. So, and then you obviously teams, I think we caught teams at a time where they were struggling a little bit, and now teams have got a lot better. And last year in the Six Nations, we got shown up a little bit by some very good teams. And I think now we're at a place where no one really knows what's going to happen in the Six Nations. No one knows what's going to happen in the World Cup. No one really knows who's going to win it. There's not one clear favourite, which is brilliant for rugby. And for England, I think hopefully it'll show the character of the team and a bit of resilience of coming back from a year of not so great results. Hopefully we can go back on an upward curve.
Talk to me about the messaging from Eddie. He comes in, and you're right to point that out, and I do want to touch on Stuart Lancaster. I think it's important we do that. But Eddie comes in, he has that immediate impact. Has his rhetoric, has his, the way that he is with the players, has that changed at all?
No, he's been the same from day one. From day one, he sat us down and he said, this team can win the World Cup, and it's up to us to do it. So straight away, as a player, you grow a couple of inches, you know. You feel, OK, well, you look around the team, look around that room, and you see the world-class players in there, and you think, do you know what? We've got a chance. And it's going to take an incredibly lot of hard work. It already has done, but there's even more hard work to go. But he came in with an attitude that you have to win. We have to win games. And a couple of, probably put us in a bit of a, gave us that edge to, you know, really draw out these tight games and get the win. And it just gives you that belief that you can go and do it, and you win a few, you get a bit more momentum, and it keeps going. And I think, like we said, now we'll see what this team's all about after having a bit of a bad year, how he's going to build them back up. And I still see some positive things this year.
That you're absolutely spot on there. When everything's cruising, everything's rosy in the guarding, the last 12 months or so, things perhaps not gone the way that in the grand master plan that England would have been looking forward to Japan this year, it has been a bit of rocky ground. Is there a reason for that? Do you players come together? And I know Owen was saying that there are a lot of the time the coaching staff aren't part of the conversation. Yeah. You've got an honest bunch, and Dylan was saying that he likes the fact that everyone can stand up, have their say, as long as they back it up with reasoning for it. But have you boys had that kind of little chat amongst one another?
Yeah, look, we're quite open and honest that we didn't play as well as we know we could. Also, you know, we had a few injuries in key positions, and also other teams played very well and got a lot better than they probably were the year before. So I think you look around, there's so many good players for so many of the teams that if you're slightly off it in one game, then you're going to get beat. You know, you can't go to Murrayfield and expect to rock up and win the game. And we went there and we got a bit of a rocket. A couple of decisions didn't quite go our way. Nigel Owens ruled out one of my tries, which I'm still devastated about. But and then, you know, Scotland go the length of the pitch with a Finn Russell magic pass, feeds the crowd, momentum, and then we lose that game. And then we kind of spiraled a little bit down from there. So if you're slightly off your game at international level, you're going to get punished. And let's just hope that England are fully prepared going into this game, which I'm sure they will be.
The big thing, the other big kind of talking point, I say big talking point, one of the other things that one or two fans have been questioning is this idea that there's two captains now, Dylan and then Owen, is now part of that. The players, have you made much noise about it? I mean, who do you feel is the captain? Are all you captains at the end of the day?
Oh, look, it's obviously been Dylan for a couple of years and now it's changed to co-captains with him and Owen, but Owen or George Ford or Danny Cipriani, whoever's playing 10, leads the team around anyway. You know, I think there's probably too much, the media put too much ownership on a captain and his role. I think within the team, you'll have four or five leaders. You know, you'll have a pack leader, you'll have a leader of the backs, you'll have the 10 override, you know, calling all the calls, and you'll have the captain who makes the decisions whether we kick to the corner or go for the post. It's probably, I think people make a bigger deal of it than it is. In Owen and Dylan, you've got two brilliant leaders. Owen, who a guy you go to battle with, you know, he leads by example, never has a bad game. His standards, he drives such high standards of himself, but also everyone around him. So you want to get on that level with him, and it brings people with you. And Dylan's a guy who he does so much stuff behind the scenes that people don't see. You know, getting the boys together for socials, so many meetings that he has with Eddie, delivering messages back to the boys. So they work. It works really well as a co-captain, and it doesn't really matter who's out there on the pitch leading it, because they're both world class.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
This is The Grill, and drama in the game between Tottenham and Newcastle. Technology being called on at the moment, Mark Archer.
Yeah, it looks like a controversial moment here. I don't know if they're using VAR in the Premier League, but
not VAR, but he's got the clock. He's got the watch, isn't it?
It was basically a ball that got crossed into the Newcastle box. It took a deflection, and it was brilliantly cleared off the line. It looked for all money that it was going to be a goal, but it's a brilliant clearance by Yedlin in the defence for Newcastle. That means that the score after 65 minutes at Wembley is still Tottenham 0, Newcastle 0. The deadlock has not been broken yet. Spurs have dominated possession. They've dominated the chances on goal, but they're yet to score. And they're putting all the pressure on here at the moment there. But only 25 minutes remaining. Spurs, if they win, they can jump over Manchester City into second place in the Premier League, but yet to break down the Newcastle defence.
What's going on with England cricket? Mark Archer.
Yeah, they're struggling, aren't they? It's England's tour to the West Indies. Stumps on day two. Let's give you a quick update. England dismissed in their first innings for 187. 50s for Johnny Bairstow and Moeen Ali. But in reply, West Indies, solid, consistent batting for them. 272 for six. No one getting a big score there, but 40s to Braithwaite, Campbell and Hope. And Darren Bravo remains key at 33 not out. So West Indies have a big lead after 2 days. Of England. They dominated the first test match, absolutely hammered England in that match. England, of course, haven't been great overseas, but we thought they'd turn the table with that good win in Sri Lanka before Christmas in November and December, but have fallen into bad ways here. And just another brilliant save in the Premier League as well by Lloris in goal for Tottenham. But yeah, England definitely struggling in the Caribbean. They can't seem to score any runs. Their top order seems very frail at the moment. They seem to be reaching for players to the top order there, but it's been hard work.
Everyone have written the West Indies off ahead of this series, England coming in as big favourites. What have the West Indies done right? This is a word I don't often associate with the West Indies, but they just seem to be more disciplined to me.
And consistent. Yeah, often they've had individual performances, haven't they? But as a team, they haven't really strung it
together.
Is
Stewie still down there or not?
Now, Stuart Law has left the job as the West Indies coach. He's now going to be he's been appointed the coach of Middlesex for 3 years over in county cricket. So they've found some form as a team. What was the captain who had an amazing game, scored the double 100 in the last match?
Jason Holder,
wonderful match there. I think he's about 6'6" or 6'7", but he comes in at... And he looks a bit ungainly when he bats, but he scored a magnificent double 100 in the first test match. He bowls useful medium pace, not the quickest of bowlers, but just bangs in short of a length, and his height gets great bounce. He just nibbles it around. And he's been a great sort of asset to the West Indies team. But let's just have a listen. Stuart Broad, the England seamer, thinks England still have a chance, but they're going to have to really do well in the first session today. Let's have a quick listen to Stuart Broad.
Stuart, thanks for your time after what's been a very long day in the field. How would you sum up the day that the team have had?
We've given that absolutely everything. Everyone can hold their head up really high in the changing room. We tried everything. We hit the pitch really hard. All the bowlers ran in with a lot of heart, a lot of spirit. The fielders dived around all day. You know, I thought the Windies played really well, actually. You know, I mean, someone like Darren Bravo showed great fight and character getting through that last session. It's quite a simple game for us now, really. We've got to score as many in our next innings as the Windies score in this and bowl them out for cheaper than we got in the first innings.
Did you feel you didn't have the rub of the green today?
I don't know, because that sounds a little bit excusey. I think, look, we had a lot of plays and misses, 103, which seems very high for me in a test match day. Missed a couple of chances, so we can only blame ourselves for that. But look, we've had a lot of luck over the past, you know, 6-7 months, beating India at home 4-1, beating Sri Lanka in Sri Lanka 3-0, won a lot of tosses. And today maybe hasn't gone our way. I think we deserve more than 6 wickets. But we kept going, and that's a good sign for a team.
Could you have gone a bit fuller as a general point with 100-odd misses? It sort of suggests perhaps your length is a little bit back.
Potentially. There wasn't a lot to go on from how the Windies bowled on it, to be honest. You look at all our wickets, there was no rhyme or reason to them. It wasn't like, oh, everyone who came forward nicked the ball to third slip or anything. It was a little bit, you know, hit the pitch, one might, I mean, losing your best batter to a ball like Rooty got, you can't learn a lot from that. The batsman just felt the fuller balls were the ones you could score off. Any width and any fuller are the ones you could climb into, and I think we've seen that. A lot of runs have gone down the ground when you just overpitch slightly. You can control the game from length. Yeah, I think we could have gone a little bit fuller, but we're still in this game. There's a lot of fight in that changing room, and you know, a good morning for us tomorrow, and then someone plays an outstanding knock, we can win this test match.
So that is Stuart Broad. Watch on with interest with that one. They'll be back out onto the field fairly shortly down in the West Indies. Earlier on today, we also saw the culmination or stumps in the Australia-Sri Lanka latest test match between those two.
Yeah, this is the second test match taking place in Canberra, which doesn't host a lot of test match cricket in Australia, and it's Australia dominating Sri Lanka after 2 days' action in that second test match. Australia compiled a massive score, 534 for 5 declared. Centuries to Joe Burns, Travis Head and Curtis Patterson. And at stump, Sri Lanka are struggling 123 for 3. So they do trail Australia by 411 runs with 7 wickets remaining. Let's have a quick listen to the Centurion for Australia. They've had all sorts of, we talk about England's top order problems, but Australia have also had their top order problems with their batting this Southern Hemisphere summer. But Joe Burns came through, he scored a century, and this is what he had to say after today's innings.
Very special, obviously. It's always a nice feeling to make 100 for your country. I guess it's, you know, it was sinking over the coming kind of days and weeks, to be honest, but probably just a message to yourself, really, knowing that when you're out of the team, you just work hard day in, day out, and days like this can just be around the corner if you get stuck in, put performances on the board and just, you know, back your processes and go out there and try and execute day in, day out.
And a quick addendum on that one as well, because nasty bouncer in that Sri Lanka innings a little earlier on, Dimmock Karunaratne was hit by a Pat Cummins bouncer, was it?
Yeah, I believe, and he was removed from the field. He retired hurt, and he went to hospital for some tests on some concussion. And we know they do treat head injuries, and if players are struck by fast bowling now with a lot of seriousness, and so he's been treated by the medical staff. And let's hope he comes through it and can resume his innings on day 3.
Indeed. Talking of that, we're going to go into the third and final hour of the show, so stay tuned for that. In fact, we're going to be giving you some heads up, get some team news ahead of our 7 o'clock kickoff. We've got Chelsea against Huddersfield live for you here on Dubai 103.8 in conversation with Dan Wheeler, your commentator from TalkSport, in just a few moments' time. Cardiff against Bournemouth is your bonus game a little later on, but from 7 o'clock, all the goals from all the 7 o'clock kickoffs right here on Dubai 103.8.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.